Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servadidio, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Tonight, my show is going to be about a short film called Cleave. Cleave is directed by Kate Carson, written by Richard C. Bailey and Kim Wilson, and produced by Justin Pless. The independent short film Cleave touches on a deeply personal and relatable topic of remaining loyal to a toxic relationship and how it can tear you apart. Tonight on the line, I have Kate Carson and Richard C. Bailey. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Sure.
It's great to be
Thanks
here.
Thanks for having us.
So, Richard, tell us a little bit how the film came about and the background to the story of the short film Cleave.
Sure, absolutely. Well, the film, I guess it came about, you know, Kim Wilson and I, who, in addition to writing the film together, are also very close friends, were really just trying to explore topics that were meaningful to us to write something, just, you know, to create some art. But ultimately, as we explored things deeper and deeper, we started to explore this event. You know, we started with knowing we wanted to write a short film, and short films are often, I think most often, really based around a singular event. And so I explored an event that actually occurred in my life, and this film is based on that event. Ultimately, you know, as we started to develop the story, this story of being in a toxic relationship and not knowing how to get out of it or fearing the change of that situation. We wanted to grow it more. You know, we have a great, vibrant film community here in Boston and New England. There were a few people in our community that we really respected and wanted an opportunity to work with. So once we had the story written out, we just kind of filled a room with those people. Ultimately, Kate had expressed interest in directing it, and that was absolutely phenomenal from my point of view. I was familiar with Kate's work, and it was very exciting to work with her. So we went that direction, and then as we collaborated more together, I believe it was Kate, actually, wasn't it, that made the suggestion of, hey, you know, what if we explored this? Not just because it was written originally just from the male point of view, because it was an experience that I had had in my life. But Kate had suggested, hey, let's take a look at this from the female point of view as well. I would really like to kind of get, you know, more of that point of view into the script. So we started exploring that, and then we actually decided that it might be really cool to actually write two separate scripts, his script and a her script, and then it just kind of took off from there.
Right.
Kate, how was it for you writing the female version of the script?
Well, what we did was we basically just collaborated on what that female point of view would be,
okay.
And then, you know, gave those ideas to Rich and Kim, and they wrote that portion of the script. What was interesting was we had three script versions. One was the combined kind of neutral position, and then one each of the him and her perspectives. And so that's also what made it somewhat difficult as a director in trying to figure out, now how are all of these going to cut together in the post-production process, what are the shots going to be and how are they going to go together with having these three separate films, and then, of course, trying to condense that while we're shooting so that we're not extending the amount of days that it requires to shoot all of this stuff. So what we did was, after we had the three script versions, we basically took the neutral script and shot from that, and just keeping in mind having separate shot lists and all of my many notebooks of things saying, oh, we need to make sure we get this shot so that, you know, we have really from her point of view in this particular scene. So it was probably one of the most challenging ways to go about that that I have ever dealt with for sure as a director.
Okay. Richard, how was it? I know there was three different point of views. While making it, were you biased to one point of view and then maybe saw the other point of view and you kind of could see the difference, view the different sides?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I think, you know, I'd like to think anyways that I have a fairly long history as an actor and, in fact, teach acting as well. And I think that having that experience in my life allowed me to, I think, be a little more open to exploring it and you know, be more sensitive and available to that point of view. I gotta tell you, it was really a bit of an exorcism. You know, I guess, you know, all writing is that to some degree, but you know, having written about it in a very personal event for my life, it really was an exorcism to kind of look at it from that way. Thank goodness I had, you know, the input of Kim and Kate. It was, you know, without it, it would have been a lot more difficult for sure. But it was tricky, but it was very therapeutic.
I could imagine, because I really think it's so powerful when you were telling me before we started airing about the three-part view, and it's so much what I like to do in my private practice as a therapist with couples when there's a communication problem, when there's infidelity, and it's so hard, I think, for each person sometimes to be able to hear their view, hear the other person's view, and then the neutral view. So I feel like your movie is really ahead of the time and really could touch so many people and show so many people as an educational tool about how much of awareness of your own feelings and judgment and negative monologues that we have, you know, through from childhood or from bad experiences, and sometimes how they can change your point of view or distort it sometimes, or to see what the other person is thinking or feeling. And I think this film seems like it really opens people up to be vulnerable, to hear and sit with everything.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, and that might be a better question, you know, directed towards Kate, because I think I tend to be a bit of a cynic when it comes to that stuff. You know, certainly I relate to what you're saying, and having been through therapy during these events in my life and really struggling to try and understand the other's point of view, it certainly wasn't. It wasn't until having years distance from it that I could really explore it, I think, in an open and vulnerable way.
Yes.
Yeah, and even then, you know, we had many meetings about the film during our pre-production process, and specifically about these two points of view. And even then, you could tell there was still a difference between things that I saw from a female's point of view to things that Rich saw from a male's point of view. When we were shooting, that was very apparent with some of our crew members. You know, I'd hear comments while we were shooting, oh, well, it's because he da-da-da, or it's because she did this. And I just chuckled because I said, that's exactly what we're looking for a response. We want people to, if you start out by watching the Her film, will you form some sort of judgment about that person or that situation? And then if you watch the Him film as a follow-up, would that change? Would it open your eyes to, oh, I can see kind of how things are from the other side? Because that's a huge piece that is missing in any relationship, is your inability to really see things from the other person's point of view. And so this allows you to see this couple in that way. So I think that is, so far, even, like I said, within our own crew, within our writing team, our producing team, that's already becoming a discussion point for us.
Yeah. And it was right out of the gate, too. I remember when we had that production meeting, Kate, and you know, we decided, okay, yeah, we're going to explore this from the female point of view. And I think Kate said to me, okay, Rich, she said, lean on Kim. Go back with Kim, and you guys write, and really, lean on Kim for that female point of view. And I remember the first night that Kim and I sat and tried to write, it was kind of a battle, you know. It was giving me all this this input, and to me, I was just saying, I don't see it like that. I'm sorry. It's not working for me. You know, and it took some time. It really took some time to open up to that. And I really relate to, you know, Kate, or I remember being on set. I remember one moment in particular, actually, Kate, and when we were shooting, without giving up too much, when we were shooting the bedroom scene, I think, yeah.
With him?
With him, yeah. And I spoke to Stephen O'Brien, who's one of the actors, about it, and I know you were speaking to him, and I think you and I actually spoke about it too, and I said, you know, he's in his bedroom and he's looking at his phone, right? And I said to Kate, you know, this is somebody who's been being told over and over and over again, you know, for years, you know, that you're not good enough. You're not giving me what I want. You're not, you know, this is somebody who's, gosh, you know, almost unable to see the value in themselves because of it. Do you remember that, Kate?
Keep going.
Well, I guess
I'm
all
crying.
I'm saying is that
there's something
fake. I'm relating to these points of view that Kate's describing during the shoot, where it was, you know, I was watching the actor, and of course, having my very personal experience watching him go through it and trying to, again, as an actor and as an acting coach too, I'm watching him going, you know, where does he need to be coming from for this, and in my point of view, where he was coming from in that moment of, you know, receiving this text message in the wee hours of the morning, you know, he was coming from a place of, you know, he's been told by somebody who he thinks he loves more than anything else for years that he doesn't give her what she needs, you know, and that's a tremendously difficult place to be as a human being, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And from the, I think, you know, maybe a lot of men don't admit that. I don't know. I know that when you're in toxic, you know, having been in a toxic relationship myself, you know, that constant droning of, you know, from the other of, you're not giving me this, you're not giving me that. Why can't you do this? Why can't you do that? It really tears away at you. It really does.
Yes, now, yes, and I find that a lot, too, in the couples work that I've done, and that just, you know, I think sometimes it's so general that people are not able to really pinpoint what exactly it is. It's such a general, you don't give me what I need, and I think it's sometimes really finding out, having the other person define that, and then also, I know we were speaking at one point, when is it so toxic that you get to the point where you can kind of say, okay, this isn't about me. This is a toxic relationship. I should leave. I don't think anyone's possible of giving this person what they need. And that's a hard place to get to.
It is. You know, and being able to admit that to yourself because, of course, you know, you love this person sometimes. And, you know, what you initially thought about that relationship and what you dreamt that it would be or that it would remain to be has changed or did not get fulfilled in some way. And so in the cross-section that we explored in this film, you know, he just spoke from the male's point of view about, you know, how he's feeling, not feeling ever good enough, that he's able to kind of support this idea of what she's thinking the relationship should be, or that she's changed in way. And, you know, initially she was thinking, I want this, you know, American dream. I want, you know, the husband with the two kids with the house and the front porch, and we'll have, you know, our regular jobs and life will be pleasant and we'll grow old together. And somewhere along the way that changed for her. She felt like she needed more than that. You know, some of the passion, you know, wasn't there like it used to be. And it slowly became this toxic relationship, and they were arguing more and more and more. And, you know, it just turned into a lot of resentment, and they're still in this position at the end of the day where neither one of them wants it to be over, but for different reasons, not for selfish reasons. On her mm-hmm. side, you know, she's thinking things like, well, there's the kids. Same thing on his side, you know, the kids. We have the kids in the home and all these things that we've built into this, you know, American dream kind of lifestyle. And how do you go about separating all that? How do you go about just giving that up? You know, what's on the other side of that? Potentially nothing. Potentially bad things. So, you know, there, I can certainly say that that plays into this a lot, that idea of what is going to happen. It's scarier than something that I know, which is, you know, the fighting and this and that, that does
yes.
go away sometimes. So, you know, it's really interesting.
Yes. And I find sometimes, you know, working with couples, it's so hard to be able to both express their needs, express what's going on. And it's there's a lot of feelings of resentment, of hurt, of not being, you know, acknowledged. And the walls just build bigger and bigger where it becomes, they start becoming toxic with the anger, the resentment, the fighting. And then people shut down and aren't able to express, you know, what they need, what they want, and what's healthy.
Absolutely. And then they, you know, turn inward. And that happens in this film where their communication is very low. They are not able to express really what they're thinking or feeling. And it's evident from the first conversation you hear in the film. A lot of these kind of passive-aggressive, oh, well, what, you know, what time are you going to be home? And, you know, rather than saying what they really feel about it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a huge theme in this, the communication and not the inability to express really what they're feeling.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I'd go a step further and say it was very intentional, you know.
Yeah.
The way it was written, it was very intentional to this. This is a very behavioral film. And, you know, the way it was written to have these things, they're, the things that they say to one another are all, almost all, subtext. You know, it's and it really speaks, in my opinion, towards what I think is a really big cultural behavior, which also, you know, leads us into, I think, you know, the way that we explored it through this sort of American dream point of view as well. You know, it kind of begs a question of is this a part of our culture that's been developed that, you know, we're calling that into question? Why, you know, why do we all behave in these ways?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's brilliant. What a brilliant idea in the way that you put this in the film of the subtext, because I don't think people are aware sometimes of their subtext, or it's almost a passive-aggressive type of action behavior that they don't understand really the damaging effects of it. That too, passive aggressive and being aggressive, are both have damaging effects, and being able to acknowledge them and the impact it has on the other and on the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think in life, and again, it's the way we spoke about it in the film, but in life, you know, the things we say and the things we do are all too often two very different things, and we really wanted to
exactly. Yeah, and that's that was one of the points that I wanted to make earlier when we're talking about their expression of what they really want or what they want to happen. In these films, we have we explore what they want and what actually happens in the form of sort of, you know, a dream sequence in each of their films. And, you know, whereas she's saying in hers, I want you to fight for me. I want you to do something. Don't just beat around the bush all the time and let things be as they are, because let's get back to normalcy. And in his, he has these thoughts of, you know, I'm finally going to be justified in all of these things that I've been thinking that are happening and are going on. And so I really liked that about this script, that we were able to explore both of those things. And then at the end of the day, what typically, you know, can happen is all of that is repressed and it just becomes a fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that there was a huge difference between what their fantasy, what they wanted, and what was really going on in the marriage or in the relationship? Do you find that there was big differences? Were there some similarities?
There is a big difference in what we show between their fantasy and real life. And that was actually one of the, when we had many discussions about the points of view, we talked about real life, but then when we were talking about some of the fantasy sequences between the two, it took a little bit more of each of us to see why would her have this type of fantasy? Why would him have this type of fantasy? And so, a lot of, this is why, a lot of explaining of where that might be coming from. So, for example, with her, she, and I don't want to give too much away about the film, but she wants him to come and rescue her from a situation that is going on, not because she wants it to go on, but because she wants him to fight for her, come in and take her hand and say, I want this, I want you, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make that happen. And that was one of the big discussion pieces for us between Rich and I. I'm saying to him, look, this is why I can see her having this type of fantasy, because I've even been in a similar situation to that. And I think when we talked with all the people we collaborated with, every single one of those people could relate to this in some way from a relationship that they have had. And so, I'm fighting for this viewpoint of the fantasy, and Rich says, well, but wouldn't she, no.
Right.
Became heated at times.
Yeah, and I think that's part of that therapy I was talking about, and again, it's tough to kind of skirt around these topics without giving too much of a film away, but, I definitely recall that, and there, because I was seeing it through my lens, I was seeing it through this lens of, it was difficult to see, I guess, the innocent beauty in her point of view, when from my point of view, maybe there wasn't as much innocence there, and then to go to the him point of view again, here he is, even though they're explored very differently, this same event, he sees it in a very different way. I guess to answer your question, are there similarities or are there stark differences? There are both. It is an event that they share, but there are stark differences. And having Kate and Kim, again, giving that point of view was very valuable. And I think from my point of view, it's maybe telling them, maybe it wasn't as easy for them to see, this is this person, this guy, he needs to respond in some ways to that feeling I expressed earlier of giving her what I want. I'm never good enough. Finally, now he needs to just take the reins.
Mm-hmm. And Richard, I know that I commend you for writing this film and being able to discuss this too, because it's tough when it's a personal involvement in it. If this wasn't a personal involvement, could you see maybe something that could have worked in this relationship, or even as an outside objective person, would you feel like, okay, that this was a very toxic? Was there anything, any type of resolve or things maybe you saw a little bit differently, not giving any, the film away, but something that maybe you said, okay, maybe this could have been a little bit different?
You mean having explored the story through the film, did I see that previous relationship in my life as something that could have been different? Is that the question?
Yes, or as a third-party type of person, being able to see it from different viewpoints.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I in retrospect, having now gone through this kind of exorcism and this therapeutic, experience of writing and exploring the story as an outsider, absolutely. I can look back at it now and say that, it could have been different. Now, I don't think there's any one way, certainly, and I think this speaks to a great deal of the point, what we're trying to do here. Everybody's going to have a different point of view of it could have been this, it could have been that, and that's mm-hmm. what we want.
Mm-hmm.
we want people to come away with their own questions about, how they might do things differently. And it doesn't have to be necessarily, although this one is told, you know, this is told through that lens of a marriage. It can be any relationship, right? I mean, it can be drugs, it can be religion, it can be a job, it can be a marriage, it can be any of those things. It has. It's given me greater insight into relationships. So, yeah, I can see how it's been different. But for me, to give you a straight answer, the difference would have been leaving earlier. But that's just me.
I think that's what's so relatable, too, about this film, that it can go across the board in, you know, a romantic relationship, a work relationship, addictions, being able to really come to the awareness and the point in your life saying, you know, there's got to be change. Change is hard, no matter if it's good change or, you know, change for growth, but change is hard. And so many times people will stay where they are because it's something they know and it's something that they, you know, they know what's going to happen. It's predictable. Other than having the change and starting with the unknown and not being able to know what's or having control over what's out there.
I agree. And I think one of the other underlying themes sometimes can be, in addition to the fear of change or the fear of the unknown, holding on to something that at one time did work and at one time was great. And just wanting that to come back, hoping that that will surface again. And then time goes on and on and on, and it doesn't. And, you know, there has to be a point where you tell yourself truthfully, because I think we lie to ourselves a lot, that's not going to happen again. There are too many things that have changed, too many things that it have taken us on a different course, so...
Yes, and I often say, you know, ending of a relationship, ending of a marriage is almost a death. It's related to a death. You go through the stages of grief, you know, of anger, denial, bargaining, depression, all different types of stages, and it's not so quick and easy sometimes to walk away, to get over it, and to really have to sit with it and work through things. And I think even in relationships, if it was a work, losing a job, changing jobs, any type of change, it's almost the death of an ideal or something. Sometimes people, we put things up on a pedestal and we idealize them, the person, the place, the job. And then when we get to the reality of it, it's very discouraging and very, very upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. And you know, and this really happens, I think Kate touched on this topic earlier. Every time we discuss this film, this story, we start exploring all these topics that we're all exploring right now. And I think I could speak for all of us in the crew and certainly for, you know, myself and Kim. But we're excited to see how people react to this once we release it, you know, because this sort of discussion is exactly what we're after. It would be really exciting for us, don't you think, Kate, to see how people react to this when they view it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interactive for the audience. I really like the idea of how it really draws the audience in to kind of see, okay, they see all three sides and really be able to say, you know, what was their point of view. How can people find out more about the film or see the film? When is there a release? Are you in post-production? What's going on with that?
Well, so Justin Plass, who is the producer, is also the editor. One of the two editors we have on this project, along with Mary Kehoe, which is also fantastic because they are each doing the female and the male points of view films, and then together they're doing the combined one. And so they are working on that right now. We have a rough cut of the Her film. Justin has started on the rough cut of the Him film. Once those two have been done initially, we'll work on the combined. Of course, you know, it's going to be a little while with getting the composers, with music to do what they need to do, all the sound editing, et cetera. So we're looking at sometime early next year to go to festivals. And I think if people want to find out more about it, they can go to cleavefilm.com. CLEAVE film.com, And right now we actually have a campaign that we are trying to raise additional funds to finish the post-production process to help us get it out to festivals so that we can, you know, get this film out there for more people to see, or these films for more people to see. So that ends, when does that end, Rich?
That ends on November 17th.
Right. So we're looking to raise $10,000 to finish everything that we need to finish, to go to festivals, to finish paying some of the crew that need paid. And actually, that was one interesting thing about this project. People believed in it so much. It was such a sound project that they said, you know what, I will work on this for much lower rates. Some people worked on it, you know, just giving their time and their resources. And some said, you know what, you can get me after people, you know, support the campaign. So it's been really great. And I mean, I think that's a testament to the film itself, that our crew and our cast were so supportive, so willing to get on board with this project. They gave it their all. And I don't think one person will be disappointed if they support the campaign that we have going on right now.
Yes, I was just about to say that. It must be a real testament to the film, to the crew, to the cast, of how everybody feels so passionate about the film and their dedication, and how they, you know, how they felt very strong about the film and the topic to do this. Now, there's the crowdfunding. If people want to get involved in that, where would they, how do they go about that?
Rich?
I'll take that, sure. So actually, we're running our crowdfunding campaign on a platform called Seed and Spark. We chose Seed and Spark because they are they're a film-centric platform. So as opposed to going with something like Kickstarter or Indiegogo, which are great platforms as well, but you know, those platforms also fund any type of project, commercial project. Seed and Spark only does independent film. And they have really great features for filmmakers. They have this thing called a wish list where, you know, you can not just ask for funds, but ask for gear or locations or talent or things like that. So there, if you go to seedandspark.com, you can search for Cleave, C-L-E-A-V-E, and you'll find our project there. The direct address to go to our campaign would be bit.ly/cleavefilm. That's bit.ly/CLEAVE.
Wow. How did you come up with the name? Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Kate.
Before we move on to that, I just wanted to mention one more thing about Seed and Spark. They've been really supportive of us so far. They're relatively newer platform, but what's also cool about it is a lot of the incentives that we have in place for anybody that supports the campaign. Being able to have, you know, a meeting with us to pitch, you know, film ideas, or having us give feedback on people's scripts. There are things like being featured in a mini series on the website for future filmmakers to make their own Cleave films. And that's like one of the next steps that we want to head toward after festivals. There are really a lot of cool incentives. So that's one of the things that they can see when they go to the campaign page. You don't just give money. You can get stuff too in return. So I think it's a good incentive list compared to some of the other campaigns that I've seen.
Oh, yes. I've never heard of that before. That's really an amazing opportunity for everyone, and also to get also the viewers, everyone involved. I mean, it's really, that's, I guess, something new or something that's been coming about, because that is just a great opportunity for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how did...
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, how did you get come up with the name Cleave?
that is all Tim Wilson right there. we were working on this script, and we didn't, you know, we didn't... Oh, you know what? The working title originally, Kate, I don't even know if you know this, the working title originally was The Passengers. Did you know that, Kate?
No. I did not know that.
Didn't know that, no. The Passengers, in reference to the kids, actually. We weren't really keen on that title. It didn't really sit well with us, but we were just, as I think as most writers do, you have this working title, and you're just driving forward with the story and perhaps the title will come out after it. And I was driving in the car one day, and I got a phone call from Kim, and she said, I just found this word, and I think it's a great title. And I said, okay, what is it? And she said, cleave. And, you know, of course, right off the bat, I'm thinking, I don't get it, cleave, you know. And then she read me the definition, and I was ignorant of this at the time, but the word actually has two definitions, and I think, you know, people who maybe are religious people might know this already, but I didn't know it. It has an older definition, which is to remain loyal or faithful unwaveringly. And then, of course, the modern definition, which is to divide or split, as if they're a cutting blow. And it really just, it just hit the nail on the head as far as what we're talking about in this story. You know, it's just this remaining so loyal to something that's tearing you apart. It just couldn't have been a more perfect title for it. And thank you, Kim Wilson, for that.
Yes.
I love the double meaning. It's, you know, being loyal and then having the last one being cut apart, cut away from it. I mean, it's just so powerful, the double meaning in the word.
Absolutely. And you know, it really gets to the heart of the matter. I agree.
So I have a question from a listener that I would like for either one of you to answer or both. It was, Dear Insight into Healing, I have been with my girlfriend for 2 years now. She has been addicted to alcohol and has been clean for about 2 months. She has a long history of relapsing, and when she does, she becomes very violent, and she does when she doesn't get her way. Am I a bad person just to walk away?
So, first of all, I would say no. I think it's really important that they recognize that this is a type of situation to walk away from. I think obviously it's a cleave to them because they want to be there and be supportive and hoping that she's going to finally get clean for good. But where it's happened time after time after time, I think it's, you know, it's one of the, this is the kind of topic that we're talking about, you know, future filmmakers picking up something like this and saying, I'm going to make a film about this because this is a cleave. This is absolutely one of those things you remain loyal to. You know, he's obviously, you know, in love with her, wants to support her, wants her to get better. But at the same time realizes that it's toxic for him to be in that position. And you know, so I would agree with that. Yeah.
You know, if I could comment on that as well, I would say, excuse me. Yeah, this is exactly what we're talking about. It is a clean situation. My advice would be, you know, if you look at it through that lens of what is it, why you're remaining so loyal to this situation that's so toxic, that's tearing you apart, question of what are you cleaving to? Because it's not always the obvious. You know, so many times we can't really see what it is that we need in that relationship. You know, does it make him a horrible person to walk away? Absolutely not. There are ways to walk away from situations while you're still loving somebody. There's a way to tell somebody, I love you, but I'm leaving you. There are healthy ways to do that. The bigger question for me, that my advice to him would be, really examine as best as you can the situation is, why are you staying? What is it that you need from this? What are you getting out of it? What, you know, I almost want to say, what is your addiction? You know, why do you need to stay in this situation that clearly you know isn't healthy? Because,
well, and on top of that, I think it's really important to point out that this kind of brings up another topic of domestic violence. And, you know, of course there are bigger known numbers of violence against women, but this is kind of one of those cases that probably has been hidden from people before because, you know, when you say, oh, my girlfriend gets violent with me or my wife gets violent with me, they go, oh, you know, man up, you know, do this or that. And I think it's really important that, and it has been starting to surface a little bit more, you know, domestic violence on both sides. that it can happen whether you're a male or female. And never is that okay. And that's kind of a whole separate topic, of course, of, you know, why people stay in those situations and the cycle of violence and all of that. But that, to me, is the number one ticker of, listen, you need to realize that you are in a sick violence type of relationship. And, you know, that, I think, is number one for me.
Yes. I agree with both of you 100%. And I think it also brings up that topic of unconditional love. People often mm-hmm. get confused that they think unconditional love means I have to stay with you no matter how bad you treat me, no matter what, if you're, you know, on alcohol, on drugs, if you're doing horrible things, I have to stay with you because that's unconditional love. And that's not what unconditional love means. When you have to, when you put yourself in a place where, you know, there's violence, where there's addiction, where there's emotional or verbal abuse, that the best way to deal with it is, I feel, to leave professionally. Because I mean, mm-hmm. when there's addiction and all of that, it also almost becomes enabling to some point when you're staying for and mm-hmm. being around, especially when there's, you know, there's alcohol or drugs, and kind of, you know, wishing and praying maybe they'll change, maybe they'll stop. People have to usually hit their rock bottom, and if they do, to realize, you know, something's got to change. And if they don't want to change, they're showing you who they are. And I think people realize, well, maybe one day they'll just change. But it takes a lot of work. You have to really want to change and work on yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For the other person, not just take.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And more I'm coming across men that are victims of domestic violence and verbal abuse, emotional abuse. And they're just as damaging,
mm-hmm.
and you know, there's a lot of guilt and there's a lot of shame, where some men don't, you know, they're starting to come out now, thank God, but you know they kind of keep it to themselves and kind of go into that, what we were saying, I'm not good enough, why am I not this, I could be doing this, is this my fault, and that's all part of the domestic violence circle of abuse, of keeping someone in their place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like brainwashing them so they don't have any self-worth anymore, that they question who they are and start believing the abuser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's definitely a tough area. So hopefully for this person, no, I don't feel you're a bad person at all for walking away. I think it actually shows that you're a strong person for yourself and also for your girlfriend to say enough is enough, because one of these days, unfortunately, if it's coming, it's getting violent. In the beginning, well, they said they've been together 2 years and she's been clean 2 months. You know, I think you need a long time, a lot more time to be clean than 2 months. And then if there's violence involved, that, as you said before, it's never acceptable. It should not be tolerable and be able to deal with. I think she definitely needs professional help, and also for him to get some professional help to work through this very traumatic experience.
Absolutely.
Well, I have another question. Dear Insight into Healing, I'm feeling very unmotivated about everything. I'm not passionate about anything really in my life. I feel like I'm just going through the motions. Am I depressed or just a lack of motivation? Richard, what would you say?
I would say, are you an actor? No, I'm kidding. I say that, you know, tongue-in-cheek, because I, as an artist, certainly, I can deeply relate to that feeling. It's something that I deal with all the time, and I think most people do. I think most people do. You know, it's a tough tightrope to walk. How do I make my life work? But then find the balance to do the things that give me the, you know, this kind of spiritual, emotional satisfaction that I want out of life. And it's easy. It's so easy to fall into that downward spiral of depression. I mean, it's really what it is, you know. When you kind of lose that motivation and you just stop having that drive to do things, it's a depression. And you know, the longer it goes, I think the more difficult it is to see your way out of it. But for me, it's all about inspiration. You know, and I can find that inspiration. It's taken me years of of, you know, fine-tuning as an artist and as just a human being. But, you know, I seek out inspiration all day, every day. In fact, you know, right now I'm sitting in my car as we do this phone interview because I drove out to Salem today just to take pictures and film stuff today in this, you know, beautiful city with all these crazy people walking around during the Halloween season. I find inspiration. I'm not doing it for professional reasons. I'm doing it because I find beauty in it, you know, and even for me, it's as simple as, you know, finding other artists, not just artists, but scientists. So, you know, maybe for you, it might be a religious leader, or I don't know what it is, but it's really, for me, just about finding inspiration. And that inspiration can be in the smallest things. It can be a walk in the forest. It can be listening to a radio program. It can be looking at a painting. It can be making a film like Grieve. You know, that's my two cents worth, man. It's as tough as it is to hear and as tough as it is to see your way out of that darkness right now. Just, you know, that, man, find one thing that inspires you and get that momentum going. It'll lead you in the right direction.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would just add that, you know, I think in addition to, you know, finding inspiration, that also comes with trying different things. And for you to be able to get motivated about something, you have to live for yourself first. And I don't know if something happened, you know, prior to this point in a relationship with someone, you know, because I think even bringing it back to just the relationship topic, that people lose themselves, who they are and what they aspired to be and things that they thought or felt or always wanted to do. And I think it's important to live for yourself first to figure that out, or it can be very difficult to even just be in a relationship with someone. So, you know, live for yourself, and then, of course, just try new things, try different things. Oh, well, that sucked. Oh, well, I wasn't good at that. You know, let's try something different, whether it's, you know, art like Rich is talking about, or whether it's some sort of hobby, or, you know, physical stuff, I think can help a lot too. You know, physical activity. So that would just be my two additional cents, I guess.
Yeah, I think that physical activity one's a big one too for me. Kate and I joke all the time because every time she calls me, I'm at the gym. It's a huge thing for me. And, you know, I went through a very difficult time in my life at one point, and it's relative to this story of Cleve. And at that time, you know, I went through a deep depression and was in therapy and even was on medication at some point. And I found for myself, I know, you know, different strokes for different folks for sure, but the physical activity ultimately became my medication. You know, I'm no longer on any medication because physical activity gives me that. So I agree with Kate. When I find that I'm getting down like that, even just saying I'm going to go for a walk, you know, if I can't motivate myself to go with heavy weights or you know, or run, just going out and going for a brisk walk for 20 minutes, you know, it really does get the endorphins on and helps. So that could be the thing that starts that momentum going for sure.
Yes. And I find, too, to be passionate about something, sometimes for some people it doesn't happen overnight. And it's okay, as you said, to try different things. And it might not be your cup of tea. It might not be, maybe it's just not it. But not to get so discouraged if something doesn't work, or you thought maybe you would really like canoeing and then you went and you absolutely hated it. I think that's okay. It's okay to be able to take the disappointments, but then also to be pleasantly surprised. And so I tell people sometimes, just try it. You might actually be pleasantly surprised. And it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes practice. And I know it's hard when you're feeling depressed, when there's lack of motivation and you're not feeling good about yourself. The last thing you want to do is go out and be around people or leave the house. And I think that's one of the crucial moments. To really go out and do something, to kind of force yourself. Is it just to go out for a walk for 5 minutes, walk down to the corner store, grab a cup of coffee, try to say hello to someone? Because I find that the isolation is so crippling. And then once you start isolating everything, it really takes over every area of your life.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like you said, just trying to start a conversation with someone. You can be anywhere at any time. You know, I just got back from California, and that was one of the things when we were visiting in the LA area we really wanted to try to do. Just, I don't know this guy, but hey, we're in the same place at the same time, and beyond the how are you doings or, you know, good days, you could talk about anything and everything. You'd be surprised sometimes at how responsive people can be.
Yes, and I think your film is a perfect example of people. They can discuss this film. They can discuss the different point of views. Of speaking to someone, hey, I heard this radio interview about this film. It had three point of views. What is your take on it? And just do that opening statement, open up the conversation, really opens doors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know what? Every point of view is interesting, even if it's not yours.
Yes. I think that's another great, great topic, too, that it's okay to disagree on things. It doesn't mean anybody's wrong, anybody's right, but just to be able to have a discussion and be comfortable with having that discussion. Well, I usually do a journaling exercise before the end of the program, so I just wanted to assign the journaling exercise. It is keep a log of your feelings and moods and how they change through the day. So maybe mid-morning you first wake up, write down how you feel, maybe in the afternoon, check in, and at night, and look for triggers, either positive or negative. Why I like to do this journaling exercise, it really brings an awareness of how you are during the day, different triggers, because sometimes people don't realize something subconsciously, consciously can make you happy, can put you in a bad mood. And I think when people become open and allow themselves to be vulnerable to how they're feeling, to what's going around them in their environment, they're able to get a better idea of how their interaction is and their quality of interaction with other people. Have you guys ever thought of something like that or do that at any time?
Well, I've always been the type of person who says, I'm going to write in a journal. And I start it for a few days, and I get very convoluted with it, and that, you know, writing 3-4 pages at a time, and then I forget about it for 5 years. So I think for me, one of the takeaways was keep it short and sweet. You don't have to make it. It doesn't have to be this big thing. It could just be a word sometimes. And you know, there are even apps out there. I found an app recently that takes all the photos that I have in my phone. If I take a photo on this day, it will store it by day into this app, and I can write just a quick note about it if I want to. And that is like a daily journal. So there are things like that that you can do if you're finding that, you know, okay, I'm not really keeping up with this all the time, and people have their phones on them all the time. So something like that might be an alternative.
Yes.
Thanks for telling me about that.
That's a great idea.
Kate.
That app sounds great. It sounds interesting.
You know what? Let me look it up real quick. I have a phone here. I can see what it's called. It's called Heyday. Hey, H-E-Y, Day, D-A-Y. And, you know, it gives you a timestamp, and you can see the photo that you took, and you can just write a note. And, you know, I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've always seen the value in journaling. As I mentioned earlier, I teach acting, and that's something that I tell all of my students is to keep a journal during their training, because I was advised to do that by my teacher back in a long time ago, and I did. And, you know, another valuable thing that comes from that is something that you don't see immediately. And an example of that is I'm able now, you know, 18 or so years later after I did my training, to reference that experience and share it with my students and look back and see the places that I was at then as a 20-something and now as a you know, 40-something, you know, see the places I travel emotionally and physically and have insights because of that journaling that are very valuable, especially as an artist,
yeah,
but certainly just as a person.
I think, that's the best topic is, you go back at a different time in your life and look at what you wrote, and it really helps you have a better insight and idea. Because sometimes when you're going through something, you really don't know what you're feeling. You don't know what's going on. But to be able to go back like a week later, a month later, a year later, and be able to say, wow, what was going on, and actually read what you wrote is really powerful, very, very powerful.
Yeah.
Well, guys, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It was wonderful having you both on.
Thank you very much for having us.
And please keep us updated on any new updates about the film. And again, anyone has any questions, they can send it to insightintohealing@gmail.com. And you can also go to our Facebook page, Insight into Healing, and leave me a private message or a message. All names are confidential unless otherwise instructed. And guys, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. And everybody, good night and God bless.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye. Thank you.
Good night. Good night.